were creating a world, I wouldn't mess about with butterflies and daffodils. I would have started with lasers. 8 o'clock, day one.
Well, hello everyone. Excitement abounds as the All Japan Excite series returns yet again.
With a really quick turnaround this time.
Yeah, I know. We've really got our act together, haven't we, Stephen? Anyway, let us not waste any time at all, and let's go straight in to October the 18th, 1996. It is Kawada versus Kobashi in an hour-long match. Now, Stephen, you did not watch this match.
You told me not to.
Yes, because I felt there was no reason, real reason, to put you through it, because... Like, what was the other hour-long match that we watched? It was
Kobashi and Kawada, and I liked it a lot more than you.
Yeah, now, there's a couple of weird things with this match, okay? I'll just very quickly go through some points and things, okay? First of all, we have flashbacks, like replays of previous bouts.
What?
Interspersed into the first minute.
Really?
Which is really bizarre, yeah. So there is like you the match starts, you get a couple of moves, and then you get like a flashback to Kobashi beating Taue, and then a flashback to Kobashi beating Hansen. So yeah, well, really weird.
Interesting. I'm just looking at the thread here on Pro Wrestling Only, and Charles has it 4.5 stars.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
He really liked it. So,
but you will notice that only 4 people commented, so a lot of people decided to take this one off during the watching. Yeah. A lot of lazy yearbook watchers there. Not that I could get through a single yearbook. Anyway, here's my first Parv's point, okay?
Parv's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
Such a pity. For an hour-long match, I really don't think that an hour fits this style at all. It doesn't work, okay? Both of these guys are good on the mat. Both are good at selling, okay? That's without doubt. But to me, having them go an hour puts an additional pressure on them to have a match that is going to be added to that pantheon of hour-long matches in Japan. And don't forget, that's a tradition that goes all the way back to, you know, the days of Luthers.
Yeah.
So it puts like a weird pressure on things to be like, you know, like on New Year's Eve, there's like a pressure to have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it always sucks.
And like, it seems like they're saying, well, look, you know, Dory versus Inoki, or Dory versus Barber, or you know, all those matches in the like, or like Flair versus Jumbo or something. Mm-hmm. All those matches that are classics in the tradition of long matches in Japan, go out there and have something the equivalent of Jack Briscoe versus Dory Funk Jr. or something like this, okay? And to me, it seems like it's going to set them up for a fail. I mean, let's face it. A style that's built around head drops and stiffness is not designed to go an hour, okay? And having them slow down, to me, seems very weird. Doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, they don't really have the patience to build a match like, for example, I don't know, Nick Bockwinkel versus Kurt Hennig. Like you see a head drop in the first 10 minutes of this match, okay? So, like, okay, you're going to go an hour and you're doing a big backdrop suplex in the first... literally like 5 minutes of the match. So to me, I don't know, it just seems odd kind of storytelling choice. And they don't have that sort of patience of a Nick Bockwinkel, okay, to build the match slow and build to a hot finish, which is one narrative you can tell over an hour. But they also don't have, I don't think, like the superhuman cardio of, say, Steamboat and Flair, where, you know, we talked about Clash 6 match plenty of times, where they literally work the whole thing like a sprint. So they can't do that either. And I did actually argue a little bit with Chad on Facebook earlier on about this, because he was saying that Kobashi does have that kind of cardio. And I'm sure he does, but I'm not sure that Kawada does. So, you know, and like really won't get that kind of thing again. So to me, they fall flat, really. Despite all of that, and this is the second point, there are some very effective near falls in the match. I popped for Kawada hitting his power bomb and getting a very late kick out from Kobashi. We got some cool lariats from Kobashi. The match does pick up in the final 20 minutes. Kobashi destroyed Kawada's leg, which he can barely stand on, which wipes him out. And then we get the big backdrop suplexes and your typical All Japan head drops. So, there is some good stuff here. The reason I said that you could skip it, Stephen, is that I just don't think you're learning anything new here about any of these guys or about their capacity to go long or anything else. I really don't. PF3 on that same thread that you're looking at had a interesting comment, I thought. He said, I'm closer to Tim on this, who wasn't that keen on the match. He said, though I think I like this more than their first draw, I like both matches actually, and yet I'd rather go to the dentist than watch either one of them again. Kawada hitting the backdrop driver in the opening minute or two kept this from being too excessively telegraphed, as it immediately put Kobashi on the defensive, where he works best. He does a great job of taking apart Kawada's knee, and we all know Toshiaki knows how to sell that too. This is more of a match to admire than to love, as they had a good idea of what they wanted and what to do, and how to enhance each guy's strength over the course of an hour. It just didn't quite come together. And I basically agree with every single word of that from Pete. I gave it 4 stars. But I honestly thought that if they shaved 20 minutes off, it could have been a lot better. I mean, like, it's exciting at times, but it's also painful at times. And I actually thought the finish was really poor as well. Because it was a draw. Broadway. Yeah. So, yes. Good. You know, 4 stars is a good match. Very good match. Great match even, but it's just, I don't know, I have a problem with the hour. So
it seems like, yes, All Japan, their draws, at least the singles matches, are like more suited to a 30 minute draw easily.
Absolutely. I would, at this time, like, obviously in the 70s they could go an hour because they were just, I don't know. They had a different style.
They weren't working at the, like, the intensity or the kind of, like, I don't know how to describe it, but, you know, the destructive nature of the matches they're having.
We'll just put it this way, okay? If you're, let's say, Dorian, and I actually, to be honest, don't like their match in Japan, but I do like other matches that those guys have, Dory and Jack Briscoe, okay? But those two guys could work in such a way that you could build to a spot like a butterfly suplex or a vertical suplex or gut wrench suplex or something, and it could genuinely feel like a high spot, okay? Like, these guys cannot do that when we've seen them do some of the stuff. Like, you just can't do that. Do you know what I mean?
The genie back in the bottle. Basically,
you can't do it. It's like, I don't know, it'd be like, I mean, I wish they would do this sometimes, but it'd be like trying to bring back like a DQ for a punch in modern WWE. Like, They're not going to enforce that rule, you know? Or like, I don't know, like, I've been seeing it in 1992 with Bill Watts in WCW, like, literally trying to ban the top rope in 1992 after that this crowd have seen Pillman versus Liger. It's not going to get over. Do you know what I mean? So, yes. So I think there's a fundamental issue with trying to do it. So instead, this is our alternative match from the same card. It is Jumbo Tsuruta back for the first time on the All Japan Excite series in 4 years. And I did once say that I'd never want to watch a Jumbo comedy match, but I think this is not a comedy match. So, and Misawa and Akiyama, okay, so they're the team good guys, but they're also taking on Dory Funk Jr., All Japan legend, Giant Baba, All Japan legend, and Akira Taue, who I guess is there to do the work. So,
oh my gosh, when you suggested this match, first my thought was, what a dream match this is for you. Jumbo, Baba, and Dory all in the same match with Misawa and Akiyama and Tao. Man, you must have been creaming in your pants when you saw this listed down.
I mean, we have to give a shout. This is the recommendation for this match comes from Ditch.
Yeah.
Who seems to have disappeared these days. Don't know where he's gone.
No, but at least his site's still up.
His site is still around, which is a great benefit to our show and any fans of Japanese wrestling at all. But this is notable because this is the last jumbo match listed on Ditch's site.
Oh.
It is the last Dory Funk Jr. match listed on his site. And it's one of the very last Barber matches too. Still, I think he's got one more match in 1998 listed. So for that reason, I thought, you know, as a historical kind of goodbye to Jumbo that we never quite did, and as a kind of little nod to my man Dory here, I thought it'd be interesting. And to Barber, who we won't see again on this show. So,
yeah. Another note before we start here is, man, did Tawei draw the short straw here. Like, you have Akiyama and Misawa, and then you have Tawei on one side. It's basically a handicap match. So there is that.
What are you talking about? If you count up the number of titles that Dory and Barber have got between them, I don't think there's anybody in history who'd have more, apart from if you counted up Chris Jericho and Triple H's. But
well, Jerry Lawler, he has like 40 USA titles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Jerry Lawler, yeah.
And the other thing, which I don't know what it says about anything, but I just thought it was hilarious, is that I literally fell asleep with Dory Funk Jr. in the ring today.
So.
I had to go back and rewatch this match because I fell asleep watching Dory Funk Jr.
Unbelievable. So let me go to my first pause point, and it's a very important one. The old men in this match are not at all useless. Jumbo can still hit lariats and his jumping knee. Dory can still hit an uppercut and a butterfly suplex, and Giant Barber can still
look like Giant Barber.
Yeah, and still, well, he still worked that arm. Yeah. I was waiting for him to pull out his Russian leg sweep, but he didn't do it. So, what did you make of the old man here, Steven?
Yeah, you make fun of Tawei for being awkward, but damn, Giant Papa at this time. But yeah, Dory had some good uppercuts. I was really, really sad though watching Jumbo do his Thez press. That was a sad.
Yeah, I mean, he's not well.
Yeah,
and he's obviously aged. Yeah. But he still hit some of his signature spots, you know. I guess what I was struck by here was that he's not completely useless. You know, it's like he can still do something.
Yeah. But you know, they did it. Basically, what it was Misawa and Akiyama versus Tawei, with occasionally the other people in hitting their, you know, famous moves and getting out, is what this match was.
Well, I mean, Dory even took it hardcore at one point. He dumped him outside and hit him into the railing and then threw him back in.
He did a spinning toe hold.
He did a spinning. It was like a Dory greatest hits package. So, you know.
Yeah.
Only like 20 years too late, I guess.
What was with his hair? Like, why did he have long hair when he was so bald?
Well, basically what happened with Dory Funk Jr. is that from this point up until now, as in 2016, he just turns into the Crypt Keeper from, like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
So he's just trying to get more and more like the Crypt Keeper as time goes on.
Did you see, it was a couple years ago, it might even been last year, but within the last few years, where Dory and Terry Funk teamed up one more time in like All Japan.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. And he looked, I mean, he was basically dead. Like, they're so old, aren't they?
Oh my God.
Like, they're in their 70s.
Yeah.
Dory in particular, I mean, God, he was the champion in 1969, don't forget.
He looked old then, too.
Do you know how long ago that was?
Yeah. I wasn't alive.
So, well, neither was I.
Yeah.
My second point in this is that you can see with their matching trunks how similar Tawei is in his looks to Barber.
Yeah.
He's basically mini Barber, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, that's what I kind of liked. That was interesting about the 90s, where they kind of they kind of just replaced the 80s stars with younger versions. Like Taue was Baba, Kawada was Tenryu, and Misawa was Jumbo. And Kawada kind of kept the same kind of color scheme as Tenryu, and Taue looks a lot like Baba. So, you know, it was interesting.
And you can already see that Akiyama is Kobashi.
Yeah, he's a younger Kobashi, that's true.
So, but Barbara obviously had a very set idea of who he wanted as his stars. Dory is Dory, of course. I wonder where... Terry didn't really work. He must have fallen out with Barbara at some point. Because he doesn't really come back to All Japan in the 90s that I can see.
Does he really come back to All Japan after the retirement match?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, okay. They have several tag runs, Dory and Terry.
Okay,
there's a match against the Road Warriors that I quite like that they have.
Well, I think in the 90s, what happens is he does the hardcore stuff in Japan.
Well, he works for FMW, doesn't he?
He does FMW's IWA. He does, kind of promotions.
Yeah, if Terry was on good terms with Barbara, though, he would have been working for All Japan without doubt. I mean,
yeah,
massive payday.
Well, I think here's the difference is that Terry knew that he couldn't keep up with that type of style, and he wasn't going to go out there and look stupid. So he went to the hardcore promotions where he could still go and look great.
Yeah.
I think Terry Funk's just smart. Because, like, could you imagine Terry Funk and, well, you know, it would be really awesome seeing Terry Funk in 94 against Misawa, but it wouldn't be the All Japan style that we saw. He'd work at a completely different style. And it would probably rule, but it wouldn't be what the direction the company was going in. So either Terry was smart or Baba was smart and knew that this is the direction they want to go in, and Terry wasn't going to fit that mold.
Right. And I mean, let's face it, Dory's basically retired at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been retired in real terms since about 1990, I'd say. Like, even though he says he's still, you know, even though he still has matches, he's not really an active wrestler, is he? So, yes. Whereas Terry was still basically active until, well, 2005, maybe?
Yeah, he's kind of been
semi-retired for the last decade, hasn't he?
Yeah, he kind of comes in for short runs, disappears.
Well, we could argue he's been semi-retired since 1983.
Yeah.
Terry Funk.
True.
But no, really, he was still working a pretty full schedule, I think, with occasional trips to the ranch. Anyway, I thought this was good fun. I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, well, I had 2 3/4, but it was all right.
Very stingy.
It's a quarter of a star difference. Come on.
Some people have called this a real hidden gem, you know.
Oh, really? It was fine. It was a good match. I don't know about hidden gem. Like, it obviously exceeded my expectations.
Well, we're only a quarter of a star difference.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think I'd give the 2 3/4 rating.
Why not? Why are you against that?
I just think that when you get down there, you probably don't need that level of differentiation anymore.
Oh.
It's ultimately because I need things to map onto my thingy ratings. Yeah. A C plus is 3 stars, and a C is 2.5.
Oh.
And you see, it has to go all the way down to F for the work, you know, which is contender for the worst match I've ever seen. So,
okay, I have a question then, just to clarify in my mind.
Right.
When you're watching a match, okay, do you, at the end, if you're thinking of rating it, do you think, oh, this is a C match, or do you think this is a 3-star match?
No, I think in the star ratings.
Okay.
I do. But the only reason I've got that is because I think it was for the AWA set. I did the star ratings.
Yeah.
And so I wanted everything to be standardized. So just for that one thread, I've got this letter rating. But if you notice, everywhere else, I just do the stars. So, yeah. But I like things to be comparable across the board, which is why I've got the, yeah.
It's funny, that's when I started rating stuff, was the AWA set, and started rating things out of 10, and then I just divided everything by 2 and adjusted. So,
Yeah, I just don't think, like, once you get below 3 stars, I don't know how much differentiation you need. You know, it's like, yeah. Anyway, you can have a look at my 80s catch-up thread. The very first post lays it all out there.
Oh, okay. Nicely. Some all homework. Right.
Let's move on. That was good fun, I thought. And not the lowest rated match that I've ever given, because I believe I gave Kawada versus Gary Albright 2.5 stars.
Yeah, that insanity.
Which was a complete waste of time. All right, now, it's November the 16th, 1996, and we have Misawa and Akiyama taking on the team of Dr. Death and Johnny Ace. So, notice Misawa's little beard now. He's actually grown it out. Yeah, what do you think of Misawa's beard?
Yeah, it's all right. You know, beards are in right now. I have a beard. You have a beard. So,
you know. Yeah.
It makes him look tougher.
Yes. Yeah. And I actually think that by this point, he's looking less tired than he was, you know, a couple of months back. Maybe the beard is helping revitalize him a little bit or something.
Bob's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. Now, this, my first point is actually a point that you stole last week, Stephen.
Oh.
This is where I was talking about how good a face in peril Akiyama is. So instead, I'll go with this point. Doc and Ace are bullies. True bullies. They give Akiyama a real beating. And his selling is very good. So, yes, that's my point stripped of the face in peril talking point there. So, Doc and Ace as bullies, do you think they were very good at this?
Yeah, I think most people going against Akiyama at this time looked like bullies, but Dr. Death was especially really good at it. And Johnny Ace played his role too, so yeah, can't disagree with that too much, but I think if they were in there against almost anyone else on the roster, they wouldn't feel like the bullies they are. I think it's more Akiyama that's making them bullies.
Well, my second point is on the subject of Johnny Ace. I actually thought he was very intense and vicious during this match, which surprised me a little bit. Like, he seemed to even step it up from what we saw last week, and we were quite high on him then. So definitely better than Dan Spivey.
Yeah, and he tried a moonsault.
Yeah, ambitious as well.
Yeah. thing I had a point I want to discuss in this, because watching Steve Williams give suplexes, I start to wonder, like, because some of these suplexes, they look like just dangerous suplexes that are wrestling moves, yeah, that are, you know, finishing matches. Some of these Steve Williams suplexes just looked reckless and, like, legitimately dangerous and reckless, not wrestling dangerous.
Interesting, because my third point, and I'll just read it verbatim, is holy fucking shit, the head drop by Williams on Misawa folded him in half. Absolutely brutal. Williams is ridiculous with those head drops. I think Misawa might have been legit concussed. I think we were looking at the same spot there.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Brutal. I mean, I don't know, like, if that was Scott Steiner doing it, I think people would jump all over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, yeah, a very, if, yeah, totally. I don't know why Steve Williams gets a pass because, you know, he had good matches and Jim Ross's love of him and stuff like that. But it's something that he was hurting people, I think, legitimately.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that particular one, do you know the one I'm talking about?
Because oh, yeah.
You could see the, like, it's almost like Misawa's neck was at, like, a 90-degree angle at one point. It's like, how can he take that?
Yeah, and, like, we've seen dangerous suplexes that, you know, were very effective and dramatic and stuff like that, but didn't look like they killed the guy. I don't know, like, did this add that much more drama, but it was so much more reckless? Like, it's
interesting. I'm pretty sure I saw, like, the medical dudes actually come out and look, I mean, I don't know if it's hard to say what's legit and what's kayfabe, but that looked like a legit one to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, my last point relates to the finish. So do you have anything else?
No. Just go ahead.
I think it's interesting that we both had that same point, though.
Yeah.
Because that just shows you how brutal that particular one was. So the fourth point is something I picked up on last week as well. The Tiger Driver is truly dead as a finish.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't believe, not even for a single second, that Johnny Ace would fall to it, and he didn't. And then he kicked out the Tiger Suplex as well.
Yeah.
So, yes. I wonder about the number of kickouts that we're seeing from some of these near falls here. I mean, again, if this was happening in the modern WWE ring, I wouldn't be very happy. So.
Well, it's happening in the modern WWE ring.
And I'm not very happy.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Like, look at John Cena last year. Like, he would, like, his FU finisher is dead. Like, the attitude adjustment's dead. He added moves that could have been finishers and killed them off right away. And I think WWE kind of has been morphing lately into 90s All Japan.
Well, look at Kevin Owens. I mean,
yeah.
He's just, I don't know, there's a lot of this sort of thing. But, I mean, it's been a problem for longer than this. Just this, I mean, Cena's decided to become like an indie worker recently.
Yeah.
But, like, I think back to some of the things like Cena versus The Rock. To me, that wasn't a match. That was literally just a 15
the first
minute.
One or the second one.
But
so I thought the first one was good, and the second one was not good at all.
I don't like either of them.
Yeah.
The second one was really poor. I didn't like the first one. Like that was literally like after like minute two, they started going for the, you know. It was just one long. That was basically a finishing run as a match,
yeah.
Without anything before it. Yeah. So,
and I think All Japan kind of peaks in late '95, early '96, and then I think the kickouts and the move killing really kicks up in '96, and by the time you get to the late '90s, it's just ridiculous. I think, but.
We're starting to see it creep in here, I think. Anyway, despite all of that, I thought this was a pretty hot match. A little bit long, but for what it was. But hot match nonetheless, so I gave it 4 stars. What do you reckon?
Yeah, a little long, definitely. And there were some dull moments, but that the last stretch was really, really great. I had a 3.75.
Okay, yeah, fair. I can see that. Yeah. And I can see you being a little bit more affected by the length than me as well. Bear in mind, I'd sat through an hour long draw before getting to this match. So
that's true. You know.
Okay, let's move on because a few nights later, this is November the 22nd, 1996, Williams and Ace would go up against Kawada and Tawe. And I've just written in my notes here we go, the buddies against the buddies.
Yeah.
What you're going to do against the Holy Demon Army, huh?
Yeah, this is the first time I think we've seen this, too. So.
Just another quick, two more little quick kind of notes here. The venue looks pretty different, I thought.
It did.
From our usual. It seems somehow grittier than usual.
I was trying to figure it out, and like at first I thought maybe they were in the wrong, like different corners than usual. But no, they were. That was the same corners as that six man earlier. I think it was just darker. Like it was. There was definitely a different look to this one. Maybe this one wasn't taped for TV. It was maybe just taped for like commercial tape or something. I'm not sure, but it definitely had a much darker look.
Yeah, it just seems good. Like the word I'd use is grittier, more like a kind of I don't know, smaller venue, I guess.
Yeah. Probably was.
And one other little thing. Have you noticed that Tawe now has a little beard as well?
Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah, little beard on Tawe as well. 4 out of 10 for Tawe's beard. So, just keep in note, Williams has probably got the best beard in all Japan at this point, which isn't saying a lot.
No.
Okay, so do you have any kind of pre-match, like going into the match notes before the first point?
No, let's get to the Parv's points.
Parv's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. All right, well, the number one is... Okay, Kawada has got to be in that face and peril discussion as well. Because he does a great leg sell job in this one. Which we know, of course, that he excels at the leg selling job. We've seen him do it numerous times before. But that doesn't diminish how good this one was. Agree?
Oh, yeah. Kawada, man. Like, he's great at selling everything, but for some reason, the leg, he's just extra great at. Yeah, and I wrote down amazing selling by Kawada. He was tremendous again.
And my second point is really the flip side of that, which I thought that Doc is still on really good form here in 1996. It has to be said. I mean, I loved how he went after Kawada's leg. He was good. He showed good intensity, and I think he's proven himself to be quite a good surrogate to Stan Hansen, notwithstanding the stuff we were just talking about, his recklessness and so on. But yeah, I still think he's pretty good. What do you reckon?
Yeah, he's very serviceable in that role. One thing I do question is how good Williams was, or if just how great his opponents was doing these types of matches. Like I wonder, like we saw Big Boss Man in for a couple matches and stuff, but if he had the run Williams had, or some other big guy at that time, like I wonder if Williams is really that great, or if he's just in there with the right opponents at the right time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting one. The thing is that Steve Williams is probably better than you're giving him credit. I mean, he was used to tagging with DBRC and Mid-South, and he's good in all of that stuff.
Yeah,
he's got some decent pedigree on him by this point, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's been 10, 11-year veteran by this point. So, I don't know, but I do see what you're saying. Like, how much is he a replaceable part? But then, you'd also ask the same question of Johnny Ace, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I think really Johnny Ace could have been replaced by a lot of other guys, and it would have worked just as well.
Dan Spivey?
Maybe not Spivey.
Okay. I don't know why I always go to him as the comparison.
Oh, people are really high on his All Japan run, though. So maybe we need to do some go back in time in the future and kind of check out some Spivey tags or something.
I'm just trying to think of like who else could... You say that, though, but who else could slot into these matches?
Well,
like, I honestly don't think Bossman could have worked some of these matches. Like, he'd have been absolutely... Can you imagine how much sweat he'd have on him after...
He would have 30-minute sweat on him.
Jesus, I mean,
I think we see Vader later. He's
Vader probably would have made the matches better, to be honest. Just trying to think of somebody comparable.
Think who was wrestling at the time in like North America. So you had like the Steiner, Scott Norton. He would have
What about the Steiners?
Steiners, yeah. Why not?
I don't see why not, actually. Yeah, I reckon you could stick the Steiners in these matches and they'd be fine.
I think if Sting was there, he would have done just as well.
Sting?
Yeah.
See, I struggle with this because I do not see Sting as a big man like Steve Williams. Everybody always talks about him like one.
Well, I think in Japan he would have looked bigger.
Would he? Steve Williams is like a big dude, like a 300-pounder.
That's true. Let me see. The Barbarian in 96 would have been interesting.
Haku?
Haku? Yeah,
or Meng, as he would go in.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting to think about whether you could put a dude like the Barbarian in one of these slots. I mean, he's a perfectly good worker.
I know one person who wouldn't have done as well, who's a big guy, Stevie Ray.
Oh come on, Jesus! I mean, Stevie Ray is not very good.
So there is a limit to how like. obviously Steve Williams is good, but I think he's definitely looks a lot better based on his position and who he's with.
Well, I guess what I always say, Steven, is it was him and it wasn't anybody else.
That's true.
And that's the only thing that you can go on. That is the output argument versus anything else. Okay, so let's keep on going. I've got a weird amount of notes for this match.
Okay, so I didn't write much down. I just kind of took it in and I was going to react to whatever you're going to say. So hit me so with another point.
So the third point, Tawe and Johnny Ace strangely felt like they were not in this match much. Really did feel like a Doc, Kawada. You know, they really felt like extra players to this one, I thought.
Yeah, looking back, I don't remember them that much in it. You're right. Well, you know, yeah, Kawada and Williams are such big stars. But Tawe was just a champion not that long ago.
Yeah, it's just they just felt like they were kind of like they do have like one little exchange I noticed about around the 13-minute mark or something, but really they're not in the match a lot. So that felt weird. Less involved than usual, Tawe. Now this is the fourth point. And talking about things that are starting to bug me, Stephen, there is an awful lot of lying outside on the floor in All Japan in 1996, and I am not a fan of this trope. How many times in these matches have we seen a dude take a move and then just lie outside on the floor? It's like a standard go-to spot now. And it's not like they're going out there to blade or... I don't know, I find it really irritating.
I found it very clever the first few times they did it, because like, of course, if you're hit by a big move, you don't want to be pinned, you roll to the floor. But yeah, it seems they're going into it too much, and it's diminishing returns.
Yeah, it's starting to really bug me now. I mean, obviously these matches weren't designed to be watched back to back, but when they do it, when they go to it every single time, it starts to get a little bit irritating. And then my fifth point is that I felt that... remember the note I said, what happens when the bullies go against the bullies?
Yeah.
Well, as it happens, the bullies win, because I felt Kawada and Tawe worked far too much from underneath in this match. I mean, yes, I understand the structure of, you know, Southern Tag psychology, and this is a great example of it. We had Kawada as the face in peril. But I thought that old Dangerous Kay and Terrific Terry T here had a big enough rep, okay, that they could have gone a bit more toe-to-toe with Ace and Williams. I thought, you know, this is the Holy Demon Army here.
Yeah.
And it's not like... And I don't know, I just felt the Kawhi was a bit too bitched out during this match. And I'm also not sure that I bought the finish either. So... Still a very good match. Great Kawada performance, but I had some issues.
I thought, I guess I can kind of see that, but kind of my thinking on this was just that the way this built and built and built and built, and Kawada's selling in the face and peril segment and the heat this match was getting, I came out of this pretty high on it at 4.5.
Well, I went to 4. So I'm not, you know, not a million miles away, but, you know, very good match as opposed to like a great, great match in my mind. So
it's not making my top 100.
No. It's still a very good Kawada. You know, we know he can do the leg stuff, so well done.
Yeah.
And he's got to be like, I don't know, any like maybe Randy Savage. You'd put in the conversation for the leg injury.
I thought Brett was really good at it too, but I'm a bigger Brett mark than you, obviously.
Yeah, no, but Brett is good at that when he has to do it.
Sting was, yeah. I'm thinking of the Clash in November 91. Sting's leg selling in that was really great too. Versus Rude.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't put Sting in that conversation, to be honest. maybe Ricky Steamboat. I could put Ricky Steamboat in most conversations.
Especially for selling.
Yeah. I tell you what, Ricky Steamboat is actually better at selling like ribs or...
Oh, I always think of ribs and back for Steamboat.
But like he's good at selling like the entire body. Whereas I say Kawada or Savage are more limb-based.
Yeah, that's fair.
which is a weird point to make, but, you know.
No, it's a true point. I was actually wondering now that I know when this show started, Kawada, you weren't the highest on. You seem to be giving him a lot of praise throughout this last couple shows. So I was wondering, has he hit your top 10 of greatest wrestler ever yet? Or where's Kawada sitting for you?
Well, I haven't put him through the old system yet.
Okay.
But, I mean, let me just think on the fly here. I'll do some live big laving.
Okay?
Now, don't forget, I have to go through it. You know, this is approximation. But let me have a quick look. Bear with me, Stephen.
Yeah, do you have a like an app you've made for putting people through this? Or
I've made a big spreadsheet.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
But I need to actually do it on the board in order to do all the little plus ones and things, because I don't put them in the spreadsheet.
You know? Oh, okay.
Anyway,
because I'll tell you, because I'm you can kind of think of it a second, but I think Kawada, last time I did it, I had him easily in my top 10. I had him pretty high.
Right.
Look at where I put him. But yeah, go ahead with your.
Everybody who does their lists a different way, but I'm trying to eliminate the idea of like positive or negative feeling. Like, I don't want to be put in a guy at two just because I like him more than the guy at... Do you know what I mean? Like, I am trying as much as possible to eliminate that kind of... it's not subjectivity, because there's a lot of subjectivity in the ratings. It's more like... I don't like... Okay, you could say, well, I've been a bit lower on Kawada, say. Or, like, maybe I just don't like him as much as you do. But I still want to give him his absolute due. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so, I mean, in the basic category, which is the offense selling in psychology, he's basically going to get 10. Okay? Yeah. Like, he's a 3 for selling, he's a 3 for offense, he's a 3 for psychology, and he'd get plus 1 for what we've talked about on this show many times, which is his, what do we call it? His opportunism.
Yeah. Taking advantage of the situation.
Taking advantage of the situation, okay. The intangibles, I'd say he's about on par with Misawa, which is about a 6. Okay. I wouldn't put him any higher, and I don't want to get into that whole debate right now, but I think he's about a 6. He's got good character work. I don't think he has transcendent character work. Do you think that's fair? He's not like a Rock or Steve Austin or Hogan or Ric Flair.
That's probably fair. But he's tremendous at what he does. And I just looked it up, and I currently have Kawada at number 5. And I've had him number 5 in September and in December. So he's sticking around at number 5 right now.
So then I do the great matches, and clearly he gets 10 for that.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it. The peak, let me think now, you'd have to give him, what are we going to say, like 19, I'd probably actually give him from 1989 even, all the way, where do you take him to?
Probably, yeah.
05?
At least 04, I'm trying to think of when the big New Japan matches were, I think they were like 02 or so.
I gave Masao until 05, so I think it's probably fair to give Kawada until 05.
Yeah, probably fair. I'd have to think about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, just, I don't know, or 04, 05. I think they'll have them really similar, which translates as about a 7 or an 8, I think. Because that's quite a few years, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what, like, for 15 years?
Okay, he stopped being the ace in All Japan in 2005 and went freelance, so that's probably a good point to stop it.
Yeah, round about there. I will say that, I mean, I've done some explorations outside of our watching for this show, Stephen. And, yeah, I know. What a traitor, eh?
I know.
I am the Johnny Ace to your barber. Yeah. Cheating. I have to say I've been a bit, like, he was the most disappointing of the Hase opponents, for example. And I just feel like I've seen, like, situations where I want him to have a better match than he's had.
Have you seen the Tokyo Dome matches with Kensuke Sasaki?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
No, I haven't seen them. So I need to like have a little root around a bit more with Kawada's later stuff to get a better feel of where I see him drop him off. But I think 05 seems about right from what people say. And then I've got this rather difficult like ability to work different styles and roles thing. And he probably, I think, will get about 4 or 5 there. The All Japan guys get screwed over by that rating because they didn't work many gimmick matches. They didn't really work any brawls.
But I guess they have the advantage of great matches, so it kind of evens out.
Yeah. And then in the variety stakes, I can only see him getting 10 on the basis that Misawa got 10. And when I drop it down, I know for a fact that there'll be guys saying, oh, what about this match here? So he will probably get a 10, factoring in like the Gary Albrights of this world. I don't know if I will give him Gary Albright, but like over the, like considering, if you just consider now, all the matches he had when he was part of Footloose.
Yeah.
All the matches he had when he's Holy Demon Army, all the matches he's had that we've seen. He's going to have 20 opponents over that time, right?
Yeah.
So he'll get 10 there. So I literally see him being right around where Misawa is going to be. I cannot really separate them much.
Hmm.
And it's going to go on a very small margin. The one thing that I do want to know is, do you give him the point for working as the ace?
He was the ace after all of them left in 2000.
Did he carry the company?
Yeah.
Did he? So if he gets that, yeah, I don't know. I actually think it might be a dead rubber between the two of them. Like nothing can actually separate them in the metrics.
Mm.
And it could come down to something really tiny. Like if I start Kawada in 89, he might have like one more year, which might give him 1 point to finish above Misawa or something like that.
I find it very interesting that the English nerd has created this statistics system to rank, while the math nerd is doing the, you know, that movie website where they put up two movies and you say which one's better, and that's the way you rank your movies. That's my method, really.
Yeah, that's because your list is going to be Steven's favorite guys and my list is going to be greatest wrestler ever.
No, it's not, because Flair's in my top 10.
Oh, right, I see. And that makes all the other completely random decisions you're making better, right?
Yeah, if as long as you have one that you can point to, then you can do with the rest any way you want.
I see. I've been tempted several times to just screw it and put IRS as my number one, just to troll everyone, but we'll see.
I see you putting him number 100.
Who, IRS?
Yeah.
Nah, I don't know. I'll put Mike Rotunda through there. He's got his... I reckon that he might score averagely across the board.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Averagely everywhere.
Yeah, and averagely across the board might give him enough points. I mean, we'll see. He'll probably beat Terry Taylor.
Well, yeah, he will beat... No, I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
He'll probably get a bigger score than the Sheik, who's just sitting on about 22 at the minute, so...
Okay. Yeah. The key is to only put 100 guys through the scoring system, and then you can get Rotundo on the list.
Yeah, well, I could game it if I did it that way. But that would mean that Vince and Jim Cornette would make my top 100 wrestlers, which seems a bit absurd. So, anyway, where are we?
What was your rating for the 11-22 match?
Oh, 4 stars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, we already did.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's move on to the final match here.
Okay, so 11-29-96.
Mm-hmm.
This is Misawa and Akiyama taking on Holy Demon Army,
yeah.
Kawada and Tawei. Was it Dangerous K and
Dynamic T?
Dynamic T. I always forget what that is. not Terrific Terry T.
No. And this is interesting because you know, this is in the tournament during the round robin. It's a week before their classic that. Most like Tim had as the number one match of all time. I know Dylan thinks it's the number one match of all time.
Yeah, and lots of people. I mean, it's one of those bona fide 5 stars that everybody talks about.
Yeah, right? And so. That's a week later. And then they had this match, which we'll talk about a week before, which is quite outstanding.
Yeah, and it's good for us because we've seen like every combination here in this little round robin. So, anyway, do you have any other notes before my first one?
No. What I want to do, because I like doing this at the tag league time, is that before we talk about this match, I just want to give the other teams in this tournament.
Oh, okay.
Because I find them very fun. So this is 1996. So last place, Gary Albright and Sabu.
Correct. good booking.
Then you have Kamala number 2 and Zamudu, who was a fat Japanese guy who wore Kamala paint on his chest, I think.
Okay.
And then you had Stan Hansen and Amore.
Okay.
Steve Williams and Johnny Ace and Kenta Kobashi and the Patriot tied out.
Why is Kobashi tagging with the Patriot?
I don't know.
What, the Patriot from WCW?
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a guy who's completely out of place. Like, what?
Yeah, he was there for a couple of years. He
couldn't get a bad part. Like, where's Kikuchi?
That's all the teams, and then the two teams in this match. There's only seven teams in this tournament.
Where's Kikuchi that he has to tag with a Patriot?
I don't know.
God.
I don't know. That's weird, eh?
Very strange.
The Patriot was in the 93 tag league, too.
Yeah, I remember.
Teaming with the Eagle.
Like, who is the Patriot meant to be to the Japanese? Like, he's the Patriot of the USA, yeah?
Yeah.
And so what are the what is there for the Japanese fans to get behind there?
I wonder if this tournament was what scored him his WWF run in 97.
Who does he work as in WF?
It's the Patriot. He comes in during the Canadian feud. That's the Patriot.
Patriot, like one of the lost 90s workers.
He gets a Bret Hart title match on pay-per-view.
Against when?
The Ground Zero, the September 97 show. It's Bret and the Patriot for the title.
Jesus Christ. Is the Patriot like a way bigger star than I give him credit for?
He is, yeah.
Does he have a nomination for greatest wrestler ever?
That's a good question. If not, he should be, really.
I am going to nominate the Patriot.
Yeah.
In a minute.
Okay.
Okay. Based on just the fact that it seemed mental that he had all these different runs. I just think of him as like...
He's already nominated.
The Patriot's already nominated?
Yeah.
Does he have much discussion going on, though?
One... Two, three, four, five, six, seven posts.
The Patriot. Now, just remind me, who did he tag with in WCW?
Was Marcus Bagwell.
It was Marcus Bagwell, wasn't it? Yeah. I'm just making sure I've got the right Patriot. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I mean, I guess he's better than like Firebreaker Chip or something.
This is from the nomination thread. The Patriot is a curious talent. Does he belong in the same breath as Misawa, Funk, Lawler, Tenryu? Probably not, but he is one of the greatest workers ever, perhaps to an extent. The value of Wilkes as a great worker is similar to that of Tommy Rogers, an excellent tag team specialist that when given shots at singles matches, put on fun, never boring, and solid ring work. So,
well, high praise to be compared to Tommy Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
The Patriot. Come on. All right. Sorry, maybe I'm not being fair. And
you need to make a microscope thread on the Patriot.
I doubt it very much, but we'll see. Okay. I much prefer the Bagwell Scorpio team back in the day.
Well, yeah. Scorpio is awesome. He's making my list. I don't think the Patriot is.
Bob's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
So, my first pass point for this match, if you remember, it's Misawa Nakayama versus Kawada Taue, is the choke slam that Taue did off Kawada's shoulders.
Yeah.
What, like, so Misawa's got Kawada on his shoulders, Taue's standing on the apron, and he choke slams him from the apron off the shoulders onto the mat on the outside. Quite the spot, that one.
It was like a modified Doomsday Device type chokeslam thing.
It was just interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I like when, yeah, and I think it's one of those spots where you try once because you're like, I wonder what this is like, and you don't really see it that much more.
Yeah, and this is going to be a theme of a lot of my points, but I think that these four guys were in a very playful mood this evening because they were trying all sorts of things.
Like, I think one spot that I was the sleeper hold suplex by Kawada.
Yeah. I mean, when have we ever seen him do that?
Never.
Well, I thought Misawa did a very inventive counter when he stopped himself getting dropped on the turnbuckle. This is my second point, by the way.
Okay.
Taue was going to drop him on the turnbuckle, and somehow Misawa like stops himself in midair, and then immediately goes from that to his trusty elbow,
yeah.
And then literally moments later, gets an Irish whip. He's Irish whipped into the turnbuckle, and then he does like a reverse springboard elbow to counter Kawada. And I've just written here, it's easier to take that shit for granted.
What do you mean?
Like, that sort of stuff from Misawa is easy to take it for granted, I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we watch all of these different matches, and just, like, I've just picked out a little sequence there that seemed to be very inventive, and, like, you know, how many times has he worked with these guys now? And he's still doing stuff that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty amazing.
They definitely don't like to put on the same match, that's for sure. They like to change it up as much as they can.
Okay. I'll give my third point and then I'll pause to let you have some other stuff before the finish, okay? The exchange between Kawada and Akiyama about 15 minutes in was absolutely awesome. Kawada's kicks to the back are just so nasty, and the sequence ends with Akiyama getting dropped in his head almost in slow motion. I don't know if it was just like the footage or like it just seemed like all of that happened like slower than usual. Do you know this exchange I'm talking about? The Kawada, like Akiyama tries to start hitting Kawada, and then Kawada kicks him like right in the spine.
Yeah,
so very nasty stuff.
Oh, they were so, the Holy Demon Army was living up to their name in this match, I feel.
Yeah. And I've only got one more note, and that is stuff about the finish. So,
yeah, bring it on, because like this match, I want to hear what you have to say about the finish here.
Okay, well, there's some really cool and inventive stuff in the finish here. We got like a double German, like Akiyama does a German, and then Misawa picks up Kawada and then Germans him himself. Now, I've just written here, if I saw that, for example, in a noughties indie setting, I'd find it cutesy and annoying, I think, if I saw that in an indie show, okay? But here, for some reason, I find it really endearing. It's like, you know, it's like they're trying stuff and they're being inventive and it's fun.
Well, I think in an indie setting, it feels like a ripoff. Like, it feels like they're doing something to kind of, like, pay tribute to the greats they've seen. While here, it's great guys doing shit, like making stuff up.
Like it, like I don't like. Maybe they mentioned that in the back as they were coming in. Maybe we'll try this once, or maybe they just thought. Maybe they called it on the fly. I mean, who knows how these matches were booked? But you don't get the sense that they're doing this for a hope for a this is awesome chant or a like. I know times have changed, but I don't know. It's like you can imagine how annoying that would be.
Yeah.
In a like a 2007 ROH show.
Well, in this show, there's a sense they're going for the win, because wins and losses matter. In Ring of Honor and indie settings, what matters is having a great match, and I think that's the big difference.
In a vacuum, yeah. But also, it is that we have seen these guys work so many times. And every single one of these sequences we're going through is something new, still.
Yeah.
Like, I don't recall doing the double Germans.
No.
Ever before. So, yeah. And also, speaking of the finish, Misawa doesn't even pretend that he can end the match with one Tiger Driver. So hits two.
Yeah.
Like, it immediately just it doesn't even wait for the kick out. He just goes straight to the second one.
He's not an idiot.
yeah, so I'm interested to see what happens here, because I thought this was an awesome, awesome match. So much action, so much invention, balls to the wall, great stuff, just great work throughout. Awesome. I gave it 4.75. It was an amazing match.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am. I was blown away by this. I didn't think it was possible to have an all-time greatest match ever match 1 week, and the week before have a 4.75 star match.
It is that good, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. These guys are insane at this time for the level of work they're at.
And I mean, it's weird because I was thinking about this before, that I haven't really enjoyed 96 as much as the previous years. But now I don't know, something's happened in this late part in November. It's all like they've suddenly all thought, right, fuck it, we're going to give them something they've never seen before. And well, here it is, 4.75. And I'm pretty sure, I have no doubt that the next match is going to be even better. Yeah. But it's amazing to think that they could have a match this good.
And then a week later have a better match.
Yeah, I mean, amazing, really. Yeah.
And Akiyama, so young into his career.
Well, yeah, he's not out of place, is he? I mean, he's... and he is so good at selling. So good at selling. Akiyama, I can't stress that enough, because he makes everybody else look better. Yeah. Which is exactly his role here in these matches.
And he was born in October of 69.
Right. So how old is he? Will that make him 30?
27,
yeah.
And he debuted in September of 92. So,
wow.
Yeah,
I mean, they've thrown him in the deep end, no doubt about it.
And, you think of the people who are naturals, from the beginning, Akiyama's got to be one of the wrestlers that got the greatest quickest.
I actually think that he, the person I'd compare him to is Kobashi in 1989. Kobashi has one tremendous, tremendous match in that year. I'm trying to remember what it is now. In fact, my buddy Chad reviewed it recently.
Oh.
Have you seen that one? The one. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I can't recall off the top of my head.
It's hold on a second. It's basically the that's the one. Jumbo and Kobashi taking on Stan Hansen and Tenryu in the date is 7/15/89. And I mean, I think Kobashi gives one of the all-time Hansen and Tenryu kick the shit out of him in that match. They really do.
Yeah.
And it's that's not just a great performance. That's one of the great performances on that whole for the whole decade of the 80s in All Japan, I think.
Yeah.
And I think Akiyama, even though he may not have one single performance on that level, I think all the way throughout all of these matches, the composite of it is probably better than Kobashi's 89.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's...
He's at... Yeah. He's basically at Kobashi in 92 levels, I think, at this point already.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. He's very, very accomplished young worker, I guess. Yeah. Rookie of the year. So, yeah. Great way to finish this show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Match of the night, I would say that's
There's no doubt about that one, is there?
Yeah.
Has to be that. 11/29/96.
Yeah. What about your favorite spot? Was it Dory doing the uppercuts?
No. I'm actually torn about what spot it. Either that choke slam off the shoulder by Tawe, or the ridiculous, sick backdrop suplex by Steve Williams gave Masaru. Now, I don't know if I would... You've given me a moral quandary, because I don't know if I want to give that an award. But I did write spot of the night, ? When I saw that. But then I did like the rolling Germans too.
Yeah.
No, I think I'll give it to the Steve Williams backdrop suplex.
That's fair. I like the super sleeper hold suplex by Kawada a lot, so...
You're going to give it to them?
Yeah. That was a great spot. That really stood out to me.
I'm tempted to give it to that choke slam off the apron.
Well, that was great
thing.
Too.
Yeah.
We've given a lot of choke slams off the apron spot of the night, I feel like.
Yeah, no, that's true as well. Okay, and what's the other award that we give?
Top four workers.
Yeah, the top four. Interesting.
Hmm. I got to think about this.
We didn't see Kobashi, did we?
No, because he was teaming with the Patriots.
We did. We saw him in that hour-long match.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, you didn't watch that. Okay. Well, why didn't you give me your order first?
I was just finishing it. Akiyama. Nasawa. Tawei. Okay, so, yeah, Tawei, 4. I was digging him in the tag matches. Misawa, he was... probably Dr. Death, 3.
Okay.
And then Misawa, 2. And then Kawada, 1.
I've got a lot to think about here.
Because I don't have that hour draw to drag me down. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like Kawada's performance is bad at that match.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's just not right for the style.
I guess your top four, I'm going to guess them.
Okay, go on.
Misawa, 4.
Okay.
Baba, 3. Dory, 2. And Jumbo, 1.
Jumbo, 1. How I wish I could do it that. No, Dory's got to be 1, hasn't he? No. No, I'm going to go... Seriously, I think I want to give a shout out to Johnny Ace, I feel.
Okay.
Because he's... I reckon these have got to be the like career best matches of Johnny Ace, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. I bet they are.
But who's going to miss out? No, 4, Steve Williams. 3, Tawei. No, hold on. There's still not enough space. 4, Tawei. 3, this is very difficult.
It is.
I'm going to give 3 to Misawa, 2 to Kawada, and 1 to Akiyama.
Okay.
I think Akiyama was really good in all of these matches. So,
oh, yeah.
As we've discussed.
Certainly was.
No, actually, I'm going to reverse that again. Sorry. I'm going to put Misawa 1.
Okay.
When was the last time I did that?
I don't know.
Misawa was so inventive in that last match. Like, like I said, you can take it for granted, but... He is pulling stuff out of the bag that he's never done. And, you know, he's had 4, 5, 6 legitimately amazing years. And he's still doing stuff that we've never seen before. So,
yeah.
Misawa's 1. Then Kawada. Then Akiyama. Then Tawei.
Okay.
Let's just call it like it is here. Okay. all right. So what are we doing when next time we're going to watch the next match in this series, aren't we?
Yeah, the finals of the tournament. Tim Livingston, Dylan Hale's best match ever. Misawa Akiyama versus Kawada Tawei from December 6, 96. We follow that up with Chad's 1 match of all time, Misawa versus Kobashi from January 20th, 1997.
Is that the one that he watches on Christmas Day every time?
Yeah, yeah. So that's a 1-2 punch that's going to be interesting. And then we have June 6, 97, Misawa Kawada, and October 21st, 97, Misawa Kobashi.
Okay.
That's going to be a hell of a show.
It's going to be pretty amazing, isn't it?
Oh.
I'm looking forward to it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll see you then, Stephen, and I hope you join us too, listeners, for next time.